Welcome. This is the second half of a two-part interview with Dr. Chin. If you're interested, you can listen to the first half by clicking the link below in the show notes at powerofthepursepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. Join us in a vibrant conversation about the constant struggle to find balance between the demands of their careers and their relationships with money, family, and personal freedom. This isn't just about money. This is about life. Now, here's your host, Lynn S. Evans.
And well, tell me about when you started medical school. How did you get, who inspired you is probably the better question, to become a physician?
That's a good question. I don't know that I can point to a single person that inspired me to become a physician. I was naturally, aptitude for science. I was interested in the sciences. I was a biochemistry major. I didn't necessarily start out full-fledged pre-med. I was thinking about medicine. And so as I took classes, I realized I liked the sciences. There were not too many paths that I knew of at that time. I mean, now I think students know more. But, I thought, okay, it's going to be graduate school and medical school. And I had done some research, which I enjoyed, but I really liked working with people. And so I thought medicine is going to be a great way to combine my love for science and also working with people. But at that time, there really weren't many role models in the media. I had limited interaction with healthcare professionals in general. And so it was a bit of a leap of faith that I decided to go into medicine thinking that this would be a good fit for what I was interested in. And I would say even as I went through medical school, I enjoyed it, but it was really my third year of medical school when we left the classroom and went out into the hospital wards, and we took everything we learned in the classroom and all of a sudden could start applying it to real-life situations and meet real patients and develop relationships with them and learn to diagnose and treat and understand diseases, that it really clicked for me that I had chosen a profession that I would really love. And so, I was never one of the students who dreamed from childhood of being a doctor because I had a certain role model, but it was sort of a profession that I ended up coming to because of many of the interests in my life, but ended up finding out in the end that it was a perfect fit once I got there.
So did you have any dreams to be something other than a physician when you were a young girl?
I did. I wanted to be a teacher for a long time.
All right. And that's what you're doing.
And so I think in medicine, you still get a chance to teach both patients and teaching students. And that's why in all the jobs that I've had, I still keep the teaching component. And even as executive director of AMWA, I do a lot of mentoring and working with the young generation. And so I find that very, very rewarding.
In my previous conversations with you, I know that you have a tremendous passion to help the young women physicians to get along in life. So given that, let me ask this other question. If you were to go back to that time when you were their age and just where they are now in the profession, what kind of advice would you give to them?
I think what I often tell young physicians or physicians to be is to choose wisely. And I think two of the biggest choices that they will make in their career are, one, which specialty they will choose, or which area of medicine they will focus on, and the second one, who will be their life partner. And I think for the first question, I always encourage them to choose something that they're passionate about, because in the end, medicine, like most other work, there's going to be hard work, but you need to have something that you're doing that makes you want to get up in the morning, something that excites you, something that drives you. And sometimes I know people have chosen specialties based on other things. They think the lifestyle is going to fit better, even though it's not their main passion. And often they'll go back to what their main love is. And so I always tell people, you can make the job however you want it. You can, make accommodations. Medicine is very flexible. Choose first the specialty that you're most passionate about because you want to wake up in the morning and be excited to go to work. And the second choice is finding a life partner that's going to support you and help you through all this, because it's hard to do this journey alone, and you want to find the right partner to be on this journey with you.
And if you choose a partner who is also a physician, is there any special characteristics you look for in that person?
You know, it's hard to know. I mean, my spouse is a physician, but I know certainly many couples who have non-physician spouses. And I think there's advantages and disadvantages to both. And I think just most importantly, finding someone who supports you in what you do, who respects your work, and who's willing to support you through it. Medicine's a long journey, and there are many, you know, weekends given up, many sleepless nights. And so you want someone to support you through all that. One other revelation or understanding that I've recently had, just looking at my own career trajectory and where my life has gone, is to be patient with the process and not look for the end result right away. When I look at my life and some of the choices that I've made, some of the things that I've done weren't necessarily the most highest paying jobs. In fact, if I look at my work with AMWA, most of that was volunteer work for years. And working at the retirement community, you know, for about 14 years, you know, that was just a job that I kept coming to every day and doing my work faithfully. And in the end, I was able to reap the benefits, you know, far beyond what I expected. So the executive director position of AMWA just opened up at kind of an ideal time when I had just been president of the organization. So I really was familiar with the ins and outs of the organization and could easily step into the executive director role, which ended up being really a perfect job for me and really something that I had been looking forward to my entire life, but the opportunity had never come up. And likewise, I recently stepped into this medical director role where I am at the retirement community. Again, an unexpected opening came when the last medical director moved on to another position and he tapped me to be his successor. And it's just been an amazing, amazing opportunity. And so what I like to encourage students or young people is, you know, be patient. The opportunities will come. And not to go for things that maybe are for the short-term gratification, but stick it out for the long haul and have some faith in the process and make your choices wisely. You know, I never would have imagined if you talked to me 15 years ago that I would be where I am today. And I think professionally, I can't imagine being more fulfilled in the work that I do. And the role that I have now were just openings and opportunities that came kind of unexpectedly, but I had, you know, positioned myself to be in the right place at the right time to have these opportunities. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I think I love your advice that you said to enjoy the process, because I think that so many times in life, it's not the gratification of what you're doing may not be apparent in the moment. But when you look back on it, you realize what skills and great experience that gave you. You then can apply it to the next step. But if you hadn't chosen that in the first place, you would never have had those skills. And I think that if you, as you just said, if you're looking for the immediate gratification, many times that leads you down a dead end road, and that's no good either. So taking a look at, I think the thing that fills you with passion, the thing, as you said, that makes you want to get out of bed in the morning is the driver for the decisions you ought to make, because there's something in that that's bigger than just the roadmap to success. So I think if you look at that, as you said, on a one-to-one basis and say, well, maybe doing something, as you just said, in the CCRC type program, maybe it didn't pay the most. Maybe it didn't do something else by comparison, but it's a thing that was so enriching for you and gave you so much more than just a paycheck. And even with being the executive director of AMWA, that's a whole other world that opened up so many doors for you. So I agree with you that I think women and men need to take a look at this and say, what are the things that really fill me with passion in the moment? And those things generally lead to something else. But if you do it for a paycheck, not so much.
Right.
So I agree.
Exactly. And if you look at my life, and because you asked me, one of your earlier questions was, you know, because I'm in a two-physician marriage, you know, how do we decide where we were going to be based on whose career? And so I really just followed where my husband needed to be because it just made more sense given his specialty and my specialty. And so on the surface, it would seem like I cobbled together literally, you know, just whatever would work to fit the schedule and still be able to take care of the kids. And it's been amazing that now looking back to where I am now, that even, you know, putting together some patchwork, you know, positions, but then staying in them long term and finding very fulfilling volunteer opportunities ended up just creating tremendous opportunities that I never would have found otherwise.
That is it. So let me ask you another question about success. Now, how would you define success? And how do you know when you've attained it?
Well, I think one thing to keep in mind, certainly for younger women who might be listening to this, is that success is different for everybody. And there should not be one definition of success as attaining a certain title or a certain position. But I think success really is feeling professionally fulfilled and personally fulfilled. And it can happen at many stages of your career. And ideally, you want to feel success at all stages of your career. So it's easy to imagine kind of at the end of one's career, at the height of one's career, that they've achieved success. But you really want to feel that even at the beginning of your career or at the midpoint of your career. And I think that's what I would encourage people to think about as to whether they have attained success.
And I know that, of course, many people in a lot of the professions define success through their toys, that the material things they have, and that they can live in the five-bedroom house in the most exclusive neighborhood and things like that. But I think, I don't know that women physicians have embraced that as hardly as maybe some men physicians as to that being representative of success. I don't think material success means that much to women as much as it does to men. I think women would think that their lives were successful if they were not only a fabulous physician, but also a good wife, a good mother, and a good daughter, and some of those qualities that I think we still prize very much in this culture. So I've had the opportunity to interview many of today's top women physicians, and they often share sometimes heart-wrenching stories about worrying she wasn't a good mother, a good wife, or daughter because of the demands and the stresses of the profession. Have you experienced the same? And if so, what advice would you share with our listeners for how to get through that?
So I've definitely experienced that, and I'm so relieved to hear that I'm not alone, that you've heard these stories from other women.
Sure have.
I would say that there's no magic recipe, and sometimes it is impossible to be all of those to everyone at the same time. And I've had many experiences. I would say in general, when the kids were growing up, I made every attempt and usually successfully to be at every important event that they had and to be there. And I had always arranged my work schedules because I did work mostly part-time to be off when they were off. And so I could, you know, do the pickups and the drop-offs and coordinate the play dates and get them to all the lessons and do that organization, but still be able to professionally, you know, do my work when they were in school. But it can be challenging, and sometimes you don't feel like you're always present and you're not doing that well. And one thing I would just encourage others is that, you know, always remind yourself that you're doing the best you can with the tools that you've been given, and to make sure that the time you spend with the people you love count. I recently attended a lecture, and I love his book, Dr. Wayne Sotile, and one of the things that he said in his talk was to be a hero for your loved ones, and that really it's about the quality of time you spend with them, not necessarily the quantity. So even though sometimes you will feel like a failure, keep doing the best you can and let your loved ones know that you're there for them. And every now and then you'll be surprised when you maybe read something that one of your family members wrote about you or something they said about you. And that happened to me this year when my middle daughter sent me a lovely, lovely Mother's Day card. And I will, with her permission, just share that with you.
Please do.
Okay. So, dear mom, you once gave me a red rose keychain and called me your little rose. Well, if I am your rose, you must be my orchid. Orchids are known to live much longer than most other flowers and stay strong and beautiful for years, even in a poor environment, like the corner of our kitchen. The constant vitality of the orchid on the kitchen never seems to falter, no matter what chaos surrounds it. And in this way, the orchid is you, Mom. For years, I've watched you juggle your work with raising three children without complaint. Though there are days when I know you are too tired to keep your eyes open, not once have I seen your strength waver. Every day I watch you pour countless hours of time and energy into your work, driven by the passion you have for improving the world around you. Every day I watch you do all this while being the best mom I could ever ask for. Mom, I cannot imagine how different my life would be if I didn't have a strong woman like you to guide me. I am constantly inspired by your perseverance, ambition, and compassion, and I don't tell you nearly enough how appreciated and admired you truly are. Maybe someday when I grow up, I won't need you to hold my hand anymore, but I will always be your little rose, and you will always be my beautiful orchid. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. I love you. Love, Sarah.
Okay, now how could you read that and not cry?
Yeah, I was a bit stuck there. I've read it a couple times, so it was a little easier. But
wow, that is phenomenal. I can't believe, how old is your daughter?
So she's just graduating high school this year.
Wow.
And, you know, this was the best gift that she could have given me. And, you know, and I've had some time this year. I've been reflecting on things, and sometimes I do feel like I'm short as a mother and a wife. And it's little gifts like this that really you treasure and keep you going.
That's fabulous. I think that's the reinforcement you need to just keep going is right. Because when they're kids, they can't verbalize
right.
A lot of that, you know, and now at the point where you're 17 or 18 years old, you can look back on that and think of all the times when you failed them. And they would think of all the times that you were there and what an inspiration you were to them. So it's nice to hear that. I don't care how old you are. I think it's wonderful to hear that. So congratulations. You've done a very successful job with at least one of them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was a very sweet letter from her. So I keep my bed all the
wonderful.
Time now.
I'll bet you do. And when you probably feel like you're a lousy mother, you can pick that up and read it and feel much better. That's great. So let me ask you a question about the future. Let's take a look at Eliza Chin, not as a practicing physician, but as a retired person. Is that something that you can ever see happening to you?
Gosh, that's a good question. Well, you know, it's interesting because I was just telling my son the other day that one of the reasons I so liked my role as executive director of AMWA was that it was the type of job that I could continue doing for a long time, even past normal retirement age. So I don't know how I have a feeling that I'll never completely retire. And I'm reminded actually of a lovely friend and past president of AMWA that I recently reconnected with, Dr. Lila Wallace. I just went to celebrate her 95th birthday with her. So 95 years. And she tells me that she is doing armchair research, meaning she is not actively going into an office and doing research, but her mind just continues to think about things that we can do as an organization. And when I went to visit her, she was just talking about all these ideas that I could help AMWA with, and I was just typing away. So I have a feeling that even in retirement, I may be like her, where I'll continue to have ideas and thoughts and want to mentor young women physicians and probably never completely retire in the true sense.
Well, I think it would be a gift to all of them if you don't retire. But anyway, let me go back to it. You just reminded me of something. When I was we'll call it the breakfast speaker, for lack of a better term, with the senior women that were at the AMWA convention in the 100th year anniversary in Chicago. The women who were there were women who were retired or had been involved in some capacity with AMWA. And I just found them to be so inspiring because they had been through some tough times. A lot of them had been through tough times. Many of them were divorced. And I know that there is a much higher incidence of divorce among women physicians than the population at large. And I'm sure that a lot of this is because of the stress of trying to be all those things we just mentioned. Sometimes you succeed and sometimes you don't. But the one thing that struck me about it was all of these women, whether they were all the time single in their lives or they were divorced or they were widowed, whatever it was, they all seemed to go back to and find strength in their role as physician. Even if they were retired physicians, they still considered themselves to be physicians, and it never stopped. And this woman you're referring to, Lila Wallace, I think she's a perfect example of that. So do I see you doing that same thing? Probably, but I think you'll also want to spend time with your children's children's children so that you'll be grandmother and great-grandmother by the time you're her age. And I can see that that is something that doesn't end, and neither should your profession if it's something that really gives you a lot of joy and passion. So is that something that you see with most of those women that were there, or am I off base on that?
Right. I think most of the women continue to be involved in the medical profession, maybe not as a practitioner, but through their volunteer work, through an organization like AMWA or their alumni association, certainly mentoring, you know, young physicians or representing, you know, women physicians in other areas and activities. So definitely, I think women physicians as a whole will continue to stay in touch with the profession, even though they're not clinically practicing anymore. And one of my newfound friends, Dr. Lucy Ozerin, she is 101 years old. I met her through Dr. Leah Dickstein, who is a past president of AMWA, and she continues to read medical journals every day. I think she's probably better read than most of us in my generation.
Well, that's because she has time. There's that. That sounds great. These are very inspiring women. I think they're wonderful. Tell me about a very powerful lesson that you learned from one of the most influential women in your life, and how has that shaped who you are today?
So I think probably the most influential woman in my life would be my own mother. And, mm-hmm. you know, she was a working mother at a time when not everyone was a working mother. And I remember, you know, all the efforts and the sacrifices she made to, you know, either get off work early to be at our sporting events or to come volunteer in the classroom or to make sure that, you know, we got to school and back okay, calling us every day, you know, when we got home from school and just being in touch. And she was a really powerful influence for me. One, to know that I could combine work with family and do it well, because I never felt that she was any less present or less close to me than my friends who had mothers who didn't work. But also, you know, she inspired me that I could find a profession outside the home and succeed in it and balance it with family.
And I know this is a question that most women cannot answer in the positive, but what are some of the ways that you take care of you to stay in good mental and physical condition despite all the stress that you have on the job?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you prefaced it with comment
yes.
earlier.
Myself included. Okay.
So, yes, and I have to say, you know, when I was talking earlier about the three spheres, you know, career, family, and self, my self-sphere has always been incredibly small and it's the lowest on the agenda. And I think it's probably only recently that I started to focus a little bit more on the self-sphere, mostly because I'm at an age in my life that if I don't start focusing on it, there's going to be some negative consequences. But I try to take time to do the things that I enjoy. For me, fortunately, that's been when the kids were younger, spending time with the kids was something that I gained a lot of enjoyment out of. And so that was also nurturing myself as well as nurturing them. I enjoyed traveling with my family. So having planned family vacations has always been important. Taking time to, you know, watch a movie or a TV show is another great way to take time for myself. There are many other self-care things that I'm working on that I haven't been so disciplined to incorporate in my life that I know other people have, and I'm certainly working on that as well. But it's an area of improvement for sure for me.
Okay. All right. We'll check up with you on that in a couple months and just see if that sphere is growing. We want that. Okay. Let me ask you a question about personal finances, because I think this is an area that a lot of women in the professions in general kind of fail. And that's because there just isn't another sphere for this. And I do understand that. But in your role as wife, mother, with your husband, do you get involved at all in the personal finances of your marriage?
Yes, that when I met you, and more importantly, when I read your book, it really hit home to me that this was a very important area for women physicians to be educated on, particularly starting early phases of their career, because it is an important piece that we do often ignore, and I am guilty of that myself. Something my mom actually has been very, very good at, and something I need to kind of, you know, take from her wisdom a little bit more. So I think it's an area of improvement, both for myself personally, but also for women in general. And that's why, you know, when I read your book, I was such an advocate for young women reading your book to start thinking about good planning and wise choices early on.
You think that there's some way that young women, even I'd say baby boomer women that are close to retirement or in retirement, is there some way for them to learn this that is not, should it become part of the curriculum?
That would be great if there could be something, you know, part of the curriculum, kind of life skills in general that are good to know that might go along with how to properly code for patient visits. Manage your own personal finances, you know, the XYZ, you know, at this stage of your life, do you have all the insurances that you really should have to protect yourself? And at this next stage of your life, have you done this? And, you know, for us, it wasn't something that people taught us. You kind of found out on your own, or someone said something at some point. I remember when we first had kids and it dawned on us, oh, well, maybe we should have a will now. Maybe we should get some life insurance. But it would be good to, you know, I think helpful to have as part of the curriculum. One of the things my medical school did that I'm so appreciative is when we all graduated from medical school, a disability insurance company had approached them. This was when disability insurance was not that common for physicians. And they, you know, got permission to meet with every student to talk about the plans that were proposed. And that's how I got my disability insurance policy, which never, never would have been on my radar at that age in my career. But I got it at a very good time with very good rates, you know, own occupation insurance that really is not that common now. So I'm very grateful that my medical school had the foresight to do that. So I think it would be useful to have it as part of our curriculum. General life skills when you go out, that you've been so busy in all of your medical training that you have not had time to really learn about.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, another friend of mine who is a physician says, the dumb doctor deals are the ones that come out so often when physicians who are not really apprised of all of what they need to do their own due diligence on an offering that might be, sounds like it's too good to be true. Generally it is. But physicians notoriously invest money, a lot of money, into some of these deals, and then they find out at the wrong time that they were just a scam. So going back to what you just said before, I wanted to ask how you proceeded with this. When you said that you and your husband looked at the situation and thought, maybe I need some more life insurance, or maybe we need this, or maybe we need that, what steps did you take to get that?
Yeah, so luckily he had had a connection, and again, it was through his training program that he had met someone that specializes in physicians, and so he was the one that we signed up for life insurance, and my husband did his disability insurance through him, and so we had somebody help us that over the years we ended up, you know, developing a relationship with.
That's good, because you actually have someone you trust.
Right.
That's a good thing. What would you advise the younger physicians today? How would you suggest to them that they approach this issue in their lives?
Well, I think it, you know, people who have the time can certainly look into it on their own. And, you know, I think nowadays there's more webinars and, you know, educational opportunities. But I think, you know, I know in my situation, you know, having someone kind of hold my hand at early stages of my career and look out for, you know, the right opportunities can be helpful too. So finding a trusted advisor, I think, can be very important.
Well, from your perspective, what are some of the most significant financial decisions facing doctors today that may not have been concerns even 5 years ago?
Well, I think, you know, because of the income that physicians have, and also I think potential professional liability issues, setting up trusts or ways to protect your assets, I think those can be important things for physicians to learn about and understand.
Yeah, I agree. And
I'm not
that can take everything away. Okay. So let's say you're standing in front of a room of brand new female physicians, just like when you were starting out. So they're battling their way through the fears, the anxiety, the stress of fitting in, and the pressure to perform at the highest level, all the while managing the demands of balancing those fears you mentioned before. So what would be two or three recommendations that you would share with them to best ensure their success?
So one, I would say don't demand perfection from yourself. And in along that vein, not to feel like you need to compare yourself with anyone else, because everybody's going to do it differently, and what one person's success is may not be another person's success. So I would again go back to reassuring oneself that as long as you do the best you can with what you're given, whether that's a clinical situation, a family situation, or other situation, that's the most that you can ask for of yourself, and be satisfied with the outcome and feel proud of the outcome, and don't be too hard on yourself. Well, and the other thought would be that know that there are many different phases in life, and things will change over time, and be flexible with that. That will allow you to develop many areas of your life, whether that's your family life, your professional life, your self-care life, being able to flow through these different stages and allow, again, the circles to change in size depending on where you are.
Sounds great. Eliza, thank you very much. I want to thank you again for taking the time to be my guest today, to be our mentor and our guide. So I truly appreciate all your thoughts on this, and I will look forward to speaking to you again soon. We'll follow up and see how everything worked out.
Well, thank you very much. It's been an honor talking with you today. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to womenofsubstancellc.com/call and sign up for an exclusive 15-minute one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.